sad faces gather round Mama. They ask her when Daddy's coming home. Daddy drives an 18-wheeler, and they sure miss him when he's gone. Yeah, they do. Ah, but he calls them every night and tells them that he loves them. He taught them this song to sing. Roll on highway, roll on along. Roll on, Daddy, till you get back home. Roll on, family, roll on, crew. Roll on, Mama, like I asked you to do. And roll on, 18-wheeler, roll on.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Strength Depositions. I'm Chuck, and I'm here with Shane and Jen, and we're at the world-famous Strength Depot Gym in Plymouth, Michigan. You're going to have to excuse me. I didn't get much sleep last night. Actually, I didn't get any sleep. I worked last night, and then I had to pick up my son. After I picked him up, we came and we trained over here at Strength Depot. Did some two-board pressing, kind of like a sissy, and Then we went out to eat, and now we're doing this podcast. So I'm kind of a little bit off today, so please bear with me. I'm a little bit slow. So Shane and I Shane and I were talking about, like, that song, that intro song comes in because Shane and I were talking about how a lot of us are the same type of person. Like, people that lift tend to be, like, these, you know, like, scary-looking dudes, you know, like beards and tattoos chicks. And we tend to kind of, like, you know, be, you know, just the guys that, you know, you kind of want to surround yourself with if you're at a bar or in your fight. But at the same token, a lot of us tend to be kind of sensitive and whatnot. And we got to thinking during the holiday season. We were talking, giving during the holiday season, and Christmas just passed. And Strength Depot did a lot of different things for, you know, families. And, you know, as I'm sure a lot of people do, a lot of families do good things for people. You know, the holidays kind of bring it out in people. And I was sitting there thinking, what would be a good show to do? And I started thinking about, like, everything that Shane does and the, like, philanthropy that he is a part of and that we all kind of are a part of. And I just wanted to find out, like, a little more about that, and where did that come from, and how did that stem from? So I'm here with Shane Rickman, and I want to say, hey, Shane, how you doing, buddy? How was Christmas?
Doing real good. Good holiday season. Like I said, once you become a parent, it becomes all about the kids, but kids and time off work, I guess.
So what did the kids get? What did you get them anything? Were they able to?
My kids are pretty spoiled all year round, but both of them, Clayton, my older son, just wanted money and gas cards while he's going to school. And
okay.
Mason was more Xbox gift cards. And
it's an amazing gift, isn't it? Like,
he got a bunch of clothes. He's at that age where dressing cool is big on his list. So.
He's 13?
Yep, 13.
All right. Jen, how was your Christmas?
It was great. I was down in Florida at my brother's house and had kind of a family reunion down there, so it was really nice.
Ben had a great Christmas too, and I got a great chance to hang out with him and to see him. And his birthday was the 23rd of December, so we ended up, like, we had his birthday and then we had Christmas, and it was just a great time. So.
Sorry.
Jen just pulled a sweat. It's kind of cold in here, so Jen just pulled a sweatshirt out of the lost and found to put on. He's a fucking booger. I'm like a legit looker.
It looks like a yellow loogie on Jen's shirt. So
I'm cold. I'm going to just take it right off.
Thanks, Jen. Thanks for taking the booger off your shirt.
Influenza A.
Oh, man. We're getting a rash of that in the hospital. I had one yesterday, a patient that had influenza A. I mean, I think that a lot of, like, the hospitals are running out of normal saline because of it.
Oh, wow.
But,
What did you have?
Because one of the big saline manufacturers is in Puerto Rico.
Yep.
Or the biggest, I believe.
And not only that, but we're short on a lot of drugs, too. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, critical drugs like Levofed and neosinephrine and whatnot. Oh. All the pressors that kind of keep your pressure up. So we see a lot of that. But, all right.
I was just sick. Did you have
influenza?
Yeah. I'm not sure if mine was a flu or a gluten intolerance, but, yeah, I lost 14 pounds on the both ends diet, I call it.
Nice.
Latina card, huh?
I think it's also been going around too. There's a huge like bronchitis kind of flu going around, and it's a lingering kind of thing, so it's lasting for several days. But to digress a little, but to digress a little bit,
the plague is upon.
Yeah, the black plague, the brown plague. So anyways, let's get back to what we were talking about. So Shane, you do a lot of stuff for families, and you do a lot of stuff for children, and you do a lot of stuff for different people throughout the year.
Animals.
And I'm curious, like, what was the inception of all this? Like, how did this start? Like, besides that, what inside you inspired you or makes you want to give at this point? Like, what brought it out of you, or what is inside you that you know maybe kind of like the root of it? As for why you give,
I don't know. I think a lot of it is being a good example for my kids. I didn't have the best upbringing. You know, Chuck and I, Jim and I, everybody. I've talked to most of my friends about this, but I grew up in a real small town, like 900 people, and my mom actually spent the first 3 years of my life in prison. So I got out. There's actually a picture of me sitting on her lap. Which is at my house, but it's pretty funny because people are always like, oh, that's a cute little picture, and it's me as a kid. But if you notice and examine it a little bit better, I'm like sitting on her lap away from, like, I've got pictures of my kids on my lap and they're leaned into me, you know. And it was actually, I found out through, I don't know if it was my great aunt, somebody, but that was the first time I had met my mother after her giving birth, because she was in jail for that long. So even once she got out, she was real young, had me at 17, right before she turned 18.
How old were you when she went to jail?
Right after.
Yeah, okay.
Yep, immediately. So even once she got out, she was still young. Even after she got out of prison, she was 20, 21, and still was a partier. Like, I remember seeing things that kids shouldn't see, you know, at 4 and 5 years of age. And in a small town, like, you know, everybody knows everybody's business. Shit, in a big town, everybody knows everybody's business nowadays. But so I was the kid who got lumped in because of that, right? So I could never had friends come spend the night because our house was the party house, and even when I spent the night at other people's, you know, there's just a stigma. Right, that went along, and I feel it went along with my last name. So I battled a lot of that even through high school, stuff like that. I mean, I was still a popular kid in high school, but there seemed to be something that went along with it. So my birth father, I never knew. My stepdad's always been dad to me, but he was the partier too, you know, not. And I don't want to make it sound like I'm bashing my family. I had a, you know, pretty good upbringing once my mom kind of got straightened out and became a nurse, and my dad has a real good job. So, but in the young years, it was tough. So I felt like, you know, not knowing my birth father and not knowing, you know, not being able to have friends over, stuff like that. I remember when I was like 8 years old, 9 years old, like even thinking then at a very young age that I'm always going to be a great dad. I'll never abandon my kids. And my kids will always be proud of their last name. So that was something that even now I, you know, try to harvest. And it's happened. Like, my son has been out. You know, we're in a big city now, and he said his last name, and people are like, "Oh, is Shane your dad?" And he's like, "Yeah." And you know, he comes home and tells me the stories, and that kind of, you know, kind of fuels all this.
I think it's funny, and I think we've talked about this a couple times, maybe on this podcast, and maybe not. I can't recall, but we've talked about it. You either go one way or the other. Like, you, like,
with
an upbringing that's kind of like non-traditional, you tend to go one way or the other. You either go and become what you saw, or you find out that you don't like that and you try and become the opposite of what you saw.
And I had my grandparents were huge, you know, a huge part of my life. Uncles were kind of more on the positive side. You know, my uncles were all wrestlers, and my grandpa actually moved out of the city. They were from Toledo, and he moved out of the city because his kids were starting to get in trouble in the city. So he moved and kind of to get them away from that. So, you know, I don't want to make it sound like a poor, you know, boo-hoo me story. You know, my grandparents were a huge influence in my life. So I think that helped, you know, guide me down the path that I chose.
So you saw this stuff as you were growing up, and you wanted to become, you wanted your name to be synonymous with something positive instead of something negative.
Yep.
So when did you realize, like, you said that you'd never have a, you wanted to treat your son a certain way and you wanted to treat your children a certain way. How did it manifest? I mean, how did it come about? What's the earliest time that you can remember going, you know what, I really want to do something nice for somebody?
I remember my grandpa was huge, and being, you know, he always taught me, always hold the doors for, you know, for women and for, you know, help the old lady across the street, things like that. So I don't know. We always, my grandpa and I would go around, and my grandpa was always sick. He had emphysema from as far as I remember. So he literally had an oxygen tank that he pulled behind him. But we would go out in the woods and chop woods, and we had an old lawn tractor that we had a trailer on that we would go shovel people's driveway. And, you know, I grew up in the country, so you'd have to drive a quarter of a mile to get to somebody's house. So we kind of always did stuff like that, and, you know, not just for money, but to help people out. So I think a lot of it is the rural, you know, background where I grew up. I mean, you do stuff like that for neighbors.
Did you see that? Like, did you see that in your mom? I mean, did you see? I mean, you talk about your mom, like, in, you know, there was, she had definitely hardships. Did you see that same kindness in her?
Not really until she became a nurse. Like I said, once she got on the straight and narrow and got a job as a nurse, she was actually working at a senior home, a nursing home, and I really saw that was her passion. That's what she liked to do, and taking care of people. And I would go in a lot of times because she worked second shift, so we didn't see each other a lot. So I would go, like, take her dinner, or take her, mm-hmm. I guess, lunch for her, but dinner for me. And, like, she would always introduce me to everybody, and just seeing, you know, a lot of these seniors didn't have people that would come visit them. So, and she would always tell me how they would ask about me and come see me, and just me going to see them, like, would make their day, you know.
Yeah.
And I would see 15, 20 people while I was there because, you know, we were spending the whole time going around. And, I don't know, it was just something that, just making somebody's day, even if it was a 3-minute thing, really, you know, really touches you.
That is crazy that little thing, you know, really does.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's the same. I didn't have the same kind of upbringing. I didn't have a great upbringing, but I had really great extended family that showed me the meaning of being really inclusive and giving, and there's always a seat at the table, you know, that kind of thing. And volunteering, and then when my kids were, my girls, I had 3 girls and 1 boy, we moved to, like, a small rural town. There wasn't really much to do. I started a Girl Scout troop, and philanthropy was a huge part of it. And then there was an assisted living and nursing home that it was amazing, and that's what made me think of it, like, those couple minutes or whatever we would do and go there every couple weeks. It was mind-blowing how everyone looked forward to it, so that was really...
So we're joined by Mike here. Mike just walked in the door.
Hey. What's up? Thanks. Even though I didn't make an appearance. Yeah, right.
Mike, we were talking about giving, and we were talking about how, like, we're talking about the origin of, like, how specifically Shane, you know, decided to become just more than just a person that, you know, does things for himself, but a person who does things for somebody else. When you were growing up, you're, like, one of those people also that likes to give and likes to do out of the kindness of your own heart. Like, I've known it for years. I've known you for many, many years. And, like, you'll do kind things for people and kind things for your family without thinking about trying to receive anything back. I've seen it countless times. Where did that stem from in you? I mean, where did that come from? Is there a place that you can pinpoint the origin of that?
No, I think, like anything else, it's kind of like taught in the home kind of thing. You see your parents doing it. You see, like, family and friends, like giving their time to other people, or like countless times. Like, I remember my father, if somebody was asking for money for food, and his line always was, I'm not going to give you any money, but I'll give you something to eat. I'll go buy you something to eat, whatever you want. And then you see who accepts the help. Or something, you know, they'll just say, no, never mind, I don't, you know. So maybe just at an early age, I've always been surrounded by people who gave and who were giving, who weren't, like, very selfish and, you know, kind of birds of a feather kind of thing.
You know, it's funny. We were talking about, like, you know, we were talking about Shane's upbringing, and it's like Shane didn't have a lot of that, like, growing up, and, like, he didn't have, like, a lot of that role parenting, whereas you did, so you turned that way because that's what you saw. Shane turned that way because it's what he didn't see and what he longed for, and I find that an interesting kind of, like, right, contrast, right. You know?
Well, that too, and, like, if you think siblings, like, or, you know, people that grew up in the same household, You know, are your, do you have siblings?
No, I'm an only child.
Oh, okay.
Me too.
So I wonder if everybody in the family turns out the same way. Or, like, I wonder how much is nature versus nurture, too. You know, there's got to be something. I mean, Chuck, you and I have talked a great deal about what kind of people we are. And, you know, we always put other people first. We're very giving. So I wonder if, what part of that is just us and what part is what we were taught or what we learned, you know.
Well, I guess, like, the way I became this way was, you know, I mean, my family's pretty, like, my grandfather is the largest influence who, I'm going to try not to choke up and talk about this. I can't, for those who know me, like.
I got through mine. I was patting myself on the back with just a little cranky voice.
Yeah, for those who know me, like, my grandfather was my largest influence. And, like, people know me, like, no, I can't really talk about him for very long because it really, you know, I miss him, right? So I just remember my, you know, I always felt that my mother and my father were quite young when they had me. And, like, they really didn't have a lot of time. They had their own kind of thing going on. And I remember my grandfather, like, always having time for me and always being able to, you know, I had a lot of anger issues as a kid. And some will say I still do.
But still a kid.
Yeah. And, the only way that I could kind of get it out was my grandfather was a pro boxer. And so, like, my grandfather kind of taught me how to box and taught me how to kind of funnel this. But I remember my grandfather would, like, we'd be driving this. Again, it's a different day and age, but back in the 70s or, like, early 80s, he'd see somebody on the side of the road, and he'd, you know, stop and help them with their car. Or he was always doing things for family members. Like, I mean, my grandfather had a couple houses, and I think he had three houses, and he gave all three of them away to each one of his daughters. And he just gave them, you know, outright. And he was just always kind and benevolent, but he was a tough son of a bitch. Nobody messed with him. But I just remember him always doing kind things, or, like, an animal would be lame and limping on the street, like a stray dog. My grandfather would call him in, and you'd see my grandfather mend him and splint the dog, you know. And it's just things like that. And then I just remember he was always giving without wanting anything back. And I know that it always made me feel good, and it always made me feel like good to be that way. So I think that's where mine stems from. I mean, my mom is a good person, and, you know, and but she's, you know, anyways, my grandfather was a huge issue or a huge influence on me.
Is that your mother's father?
Yeah, that was Frank Poleznik. So my middle name comes from it. People call me, my middle name's Francis. People are like, hey, Francy Pants, but I'm pretty proud of the name because I'm named after him, you know. So, but so when you started, Shane, like, when was the time when you were like, man, I really can make a difference. Like, I can do something. I can really make a difference in other people's lives. Or when was the first time that you did something either organized or did something as a, I don't know. Like, again, you give without wanting anything back. And I think all of us do. When's the first time you remember really doing that?
The first actual big thing I did was, as I've spoken about on the podcast before, was after I'd met Alicia Yan at the Relentless Strongman event. Got to know her family. Like I said, she and I hit it off, bam, right off the bat. And I was talking to her mom, and they'd been given, through the Make-A-Wish Foundation, a trip to Disneyland. And awesome for her and the family. I'm like, great. But then I started talking to Candy, and she said, but, you know, they give you the flight and the tickets and everything, and even the hotel, but there's still food, there's still, you know, a bunch of travel expenses. And at the time, two of Candy's three kids were going through cancer. Isaac and Alicia both. So
how can you be a parent going through that?
And a single parent, right? That's so strong. So I remember just thinking, there's got to be something we can do. So that's when I did the first run of the Strong Like Alicia shirts. And then
what made you want to do that? I mean, not what made you do that, but how did you think of that?
I don't know. I think it was just the bond that she and I had through the purple Chuck Taylor tennis shoes, if people don't remember the story. And then I'd seen...
Mike just saw the coffee maker we just got.
We just put a pre-workout. Yeah, we just put in a coffee pot at the gym, and Mike just saw it. but even, you know, through different... when I did nationals the first year, one of the things I did. I've got a friend who owns Athletic Uniform Lettering in Redford. You can get t-shirts made pretty cheap. Check out Joe.
And shameless plug here.
Right. Yeah. So I sold t-shirts kind of, you know, with the Shane Train logo, kind of just to help me get down there. And
it's
I mean,
ego boost.
Right. So I sold them for $20. So I was making like $11-$12 on each one. And that was, you know, at first kind of did it as a joke, but then I ended up making like $600 for myself, you know, which got me down to Indianapolis and paid for a hotel room. And so that was kind of my thing that said, hey, that's a quick little moneymaker, and it's not just a, hey, give away $50, you get nothing out of it. I mean, mm-hmm. $20 for a t-shirt, for a cool t-shirt, that's a win-win for everybody. So
fit great, too.
Right. Yeah, those are the best shirts.
I see that little logo tag in the back, mm-hmm. Yes.
So I did that, and then was also going to do, I had recently done a women's only intro to Strongman. And there were like 40 women that showed up, and that was back in the day where there were, if you saw three women at a strongman comp locally, that was a big deal.
And what made you do like the women's only? I'm curious. I'm trying to get into this whole thing because like you've gone from engineer now to a business owner and now to somebody who's expanding your empire. You know, you're expanding like what you're doing with Apollo and everything else. I'm just trying to wrap my head around that too.
But the women, when I was training out of my garage, the women that actually came and trained were more consistent. They were harder workers for the most part. They didn't have all these preconceived notions of, you know, well, I used to do it this way, or I used to, or, you know, they smell better, look better.
Better butts.
Right.
Well, not
all. I was recently divorced. I mean, so many reasons. But I found that a lot of women did the whole, oh, I could never do that. Mm-hmm. And then once they did it, it was more of a, holy shit, look what I just did kind of moment. So a lot of them wanted to get into strongman, but didn't know where to start. You know, like I said, if there were three women at a strongman comp, that was a big deal. Hey, there's three mm-hmm. girls. But none of them, I'm not saying none of them, but it would be rare to see one just walk into a strongman comp by herself and say, hey, I'm going to do this. So we did the women's intro only. The only guys that were there were the guys helping me out, you know, doing the coaching.
I.e. the lucky ones.
Exactly.
Right.
So, and it was such a big hit that I said, well, let's do a comp that's women's only. And then I used Alicia and her family as the, you know, the fundraiser for that. So, and that was right after I'd gotten my divorce, paid for a divorce, you know, and I got in the hole big time with bills, you know.
Yeah.
And there was some confusion over, you know, everything that we owned together. So I literally handed over, and this is one of those moments that not real proud of, but I literally handed over $1,800 cash after that women's only competition to that family 3 days after my car got repossessed, and I had to pay $2,300 to get it out. You know, so that was kind of a thing for me, and I wouldn't regret it. And I felt great about doing it. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
Because I knew I was going to dig out of my hole a lot easier than, you know, this family with two kids with cancer was going to dig out of theirs. So,
you know, it's always a perspective thing, isn't it? Like, you're going through something, like, I'm, you know, I recently went through a divorce, too. And, like, you know, for a while, like, or for, you know, I didn't want to talk to anybody. Like, I didn't want to see anybody and stuff like that. And then, you know, I seen over the holidays, I seen this this family that didn't have anything. Like, I seen a family outside, and it was cold, and like they were, you know, they were wanting, they had like the signs outside, and you know, especially in Detroit, because I work in Detroit, and it was a mother, a father, and two kids, and they were outside, and like, you know, they were just, I mean, it's Christmas time, you know, and they looked dirty, and they looked like they needed something. So I mean, I had, the only thing I had in my pocket was $40. And I pull it out, and I'm like, please, you know, if you can do something with this, please, you know, just grab it. And thank you and everything. And it kind of put a twist on what I was going through. Like, here I am, like, trying to keep, like, you know, I have a place over my head and a car and all this stuff. Here's a family of four out in the cold for Christmas time. And who the fuck am I, you know? So please, go on. I'm sorry.
No, but that was just one of those moments that, like I said, the joy that I had helping them out by far exceeded, you know, anything that I was going through at the time. So then once I opened the gym, that just kind of opened up different avenues to do things to help people out. But it's, but I've also found now owning a gym and trying to promote the gym and my businesses that it's almost a double-edged sword. Like you get a lot of, I mean, we do tons of stuff, and but you get a lot of people saying, you know, the reason that you're doing it is because of the gym or for something like that. So I don't know. I get
really
a lot
get
of.
Much of that?
Oh yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Surprised.
But and I mean, there's things that that we've done here at the gym that nobody knows about. That yeah. you know. But then again, going out and saying what we do kind of you know backs them up. So, but we just there's a kid that comes in here that we got him some equipment for Christmas. I'm not going to give too many details in case he listens. But and Dad came to me and said, "Hey, here's what I want. Do you have a line to help me out?" And Dan Gibson, Strength Haven, and, yeah. and Elkhart.
I love Dan.
Came through big. Got me a couple pieces of equipment. And I said, "Well, you know what I owe you for it." And Dan said, "Is he a good kid?" I said, "Yep." He said, "Is he going to appreciate it?" And I said, "More than you know." And Dan said, "You come pick it up. It's yours." That's so awesome. Gave it to Dad. Dad picked it up, and he said, "All right, I'll let him." And I said, "I want this to be from you. It's not from me. It's not for, you know. I don't need it for you know." For the gym, I don't need it for me. Let it be from you. I'm a dad. You know, dad lost his job, and they're kind of going through a rough time. And I said, I know what it's like. So give this to your son from you, not from anybody else. So those are the things that really make you feel good.
Absolutely. I think about stuff like that, just having a son. And, you know, you always want to give, like, your kids the best that you can possibly do. And I think when, like, parents, like, you know, like I said, I'm going through divorce. It's nothing compared to what other people go through. I just want to reiterate that. But not being able to, you know, give my kid the Christmas that I wanted to give him or his birthday, or not being able to, you know, my ex-wife, Michelle, was able to give Ben a lot more stuff than I was. And it wasn't the stuff. It wasn't the amount. It's just I couldn't do what I wanted to do. And you want to do for your kids and whatnot. And to be in that situation where you're not able to do much for your child and somebody has to come in and step in and help out, it's a blow to your ego as a man. But you care about your children so much that you want to do that no matter what. You want to help them out. And so, you know, my God, I mean, it's just there's so many people that have, again, there's so many people, there's so many conveniences, and there's so many, like, gifts that we have that we take for granted. I mean, I'm sitting here on a computer right now doing a podcast with the big black mic. And
two big black mics.
And, I mean, you know, I'm a real lucky guy, and a lot of people aren't so fortunate.
What was really cool is my kids were teenagers, and one year it seemed like the older they got, the less they really wanted, honestly.
Yeah.
And single mom too. So they understood the struggle. So one year, instead of gifts for them, we bought gifts for needy families. I mean, that's what they wanted to do instead of getting stuff for themselves. So a lot of times, you know, like you said, like you felt bad about what, you know, you couldn't give Ben, but I'm sure he saw nothing,
yeah.
nothing wrong, yep. you know?
We, when Clayton, my older son, he was young. He was probably 8 or 9, maybe. So his mom, who I get along with great, we've known each other since we were about 13 years old. His mom and her husband wanted to adopt a family in Detroit. I think it was through their church, OLGC, here in Plymouth. And asked me if I wanted to help out, and I said, "Yeah, of course." So we got a list of, you know, I think there were 2 kids, a boy and a girl, and then the family, you know, which was optional. So we went crazy, got them a bunch of gifts, and we're all excited because we were actually going to deliver it to their house. So we take it down. I mean, it was in the hood of Detroit. I mean, it was Christmas Eve driving through, and I was scared, like, holy shit, you know. And it was real early in the morning, but
even you were scared.
Even I was scared. Yeah. I'm straight.
One of these things are not like the other one. Yeah,
I am straight.
He's
hood.
0.6%,
and I was scared.
Percent,
I am 0.6 percent.
According to the DNA
real,
thing,
yeah, real 20, recognized.
23
real.
And me. The other 98.4 is straight Northern European, but
super white.
Cracky.
It's cracker. It's cracker. As
crack can ass
be.
Cracker.
So we get to the house, and you know, we were. Kind of, at least I was, like, kind of wanting to see the kids open the presents and see them happy, and, you know, and got there and realized that there were no other presents at the house for the kids other than the ones that we were giving them. And then while we were there, we were talking to Mom and Grandma, and then two other kids come down from upstairs, and they said, "Oh, well, they're cousins that we just recently took in." And I remember just seeing the conditions they were living in, going, "Man." So we were talking, "Well, what are you doing?" You know, trying to make small talk. "What are you doing?" They said, "Oh, we were going to do a Christmas dinner, but we didn't have that." So we ended up going to the store, getting them like a turkey. And so we went way above and beyond. So, but anyways, while we were getting ready to go to the store, Clayton, the mom let the kids open one present each. So the little boy opened up a basketball. So they got this hoop outside, no net, it's hanging down, it's bent. And Clayton loves basketball. So him and the little boy go outside and they're shooting hoops. And I said, "Well, come on, we're going to run to the store and, you know, get some stuff for him." Clayton goes, "I'm just going to stay here and play ball while you go." And I'm like, "No, you're not." And then mom and grandma are like, "Oh, they're fine." And Nicole, Clayton's mom, and I are looking at each other like, you stay. So, so we're like, "You're sure?" And we're like, "No, why don't you come with us?" So we took him to the store. And I remember going to the grocery store. We spent a bunch of money. We got some stuff for the cousins that were upstairs and then left there. And I just remember even leaving there going, like, we just made a difference. Like we made a huge difference on their holiday season. Yeah. And it was fun. For months afterwards, Clayton kept saying, "Hey, can I go play basketball with that boy?" And I go, maybe we can see if he can come over here.
I think that's you don't realize, or I think like we don't realize, like it's not about like, you know, like creating a cancer building or, you know, like trying to like come up with some sort of like, I mean, Corey has done like a lot of great work with Foundation. Allen. Yeah, Corey Allen for Foundations of Strength, but we'll talk about him shortly. But it could be something as simple as like, you know, seeing a family in need and buying dinner, mm-hmm. or not even. You know, the other thing that I noticed is a lot of the, like, I was talking to my son about this, people that are really wealthy, we give more to. Like we, you know, a wealthy person will go into a store that's well known, and we'll go into a bar and get their drinks bought for them. Or, you know, you get this, you know,
like they advertise, been like to have so and so where they're wearing their product. So they get this, that, and
the, Matt Stafford just became, you know, was the highest paid, and God bless Stafford, but he's the highest paid player in the NFL. But, you know, doing Ford commercials and whatnot, and getting, you know, and God bless him if he can get it, he can. But I mean, we give all these to different athletes and to all these celebrities and people of, you know, like, you know, of wealth and affluence. But when we see somebody on like the street corner and they're having a hard time, we don't even fucking make eye contact. We try and avoid eye contact with them. Why? Because we feel like shit, and we want to act like we don't see them. But imagine, like, we act like we don't see them, but yet how many people also act like that? So we basically shun them from society just by not acknowledging them. You know, at the very least, I tell my son, wave to him, say hi. If you see somebody that's down on their luck, say hi, smile. Like, make a point to do that.
Yeah, my parents had that same epiphany. They think they were, because they were, like, I was raised in a church, and they, like, every Sunday they're in church. And I think it was, like, conversations between the two of them. They would say, well, the church should be doing this, that, and the other to help people that need it, and they're not, and they would constantly be saying these things, and they're saying, like, why are we constantly saying it? Why don't we do it? You know, so they started, it was like, they had started a nonprofit, and they would feed the homeless and needy people in the Cass Corridor, mm-hmm. like near Motor City Casino, right by the new Cass Tech High School, and like on every fourth Sunday, okay. And that was like eye-opening too for like my kids, so they can see. Because they have only seen, like, one side of the track. So when they see the other side, you know, it's like it's a good learning opportunity for people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's like, I was talking about this with another friend of mine, and we were talking about perspective, and we were saying, like, you know, you see people from, like, Europe. They go and they, you know, like, Italy's close to, like, all the U.S., Italy and France and Rome and all these different places that you have access to. They all speak different languages, and they all like have different cultures and whatnot that they maintain. And the thing is like people from Europe travel and they get to see like all these different cultures, and I think it opens up their mind. And you know, a lot of times in, you know, America, and I love it, it's the best country like in the world, but like a lot of times that we kind of only see what's in our area. you know, what's in our backyard type of thing. And I think that, you know, I think having a different perspective of different cultures and having a perspective of meeting different types of people of, you know, poor, rich, whatever, I think it opens up our minds just to be able to be subjected to something different than what we are, because we tend to gravitate towards things that we're the same. You know, I think that's a big difference, and I think that we need to do that. We need to get those different influences.
Yeah, the football player, Bruce Irvin for the Oakland Raiders, you know, he was during that whole—
Linebacker, right?
Yeah, linebacker, during the whole kneeling, sitting down, during the flag controversy. He was one of the players who decided to kneel for the national anthem. Mm-hmm. Then he, I think, sitting back and looking how everything played out, he started thinking to himself that what was the purpose, what exactly is he helping? So he stopped doing it, and then he started getting active in less fortunate communities with the philanthropy and helping out those who needed it. So and that's how he chose to, you know, he decided to take that route. Make a difference instead of, you know.
Instead of call attention.
Right.
Like call attention, actually do something
action,
about it.
Yeah.
I think also, too, is like, and I remember when we did the interview with Dan John? He said he made a point, and I really think about it. Like, I think about it all the time. It's all about performance, folks. Like, it's all about performance. Like, what you do in life. Like, he was talking about the platform, and he was saying, like, you get all these gym warriors, and you get these people that go, oh, I squatted 4,000 pounds in the gym. And then, or you get these people that just go all out at the gym. But when they go to the competition, you know, they bomb out. They bomb out, they should, you know, shit the bed, whatever you want to say it. And he said, like, you get these MMA fighters, too, that will cut weight, and then when they cut weight, like, they lose their fight, and they're like, oh, I was just weak from cutting. Well, then you're not doing the right job. It's all about performance. And I think, like, the more and more I hear that, it's kind of like that in life, too. It's about how we perform in life. Like, what example do we set? And I think this topic, the reason that I wanted to do this topic is because I think your performance is pretty amazing, Shane, what you do for people.
I think on that same note, like Chuck and I were having a conversation earlier, too, about your words, your actions matching your words. Mm-hmm. I mean, so that's a huge thing. Or maybe even let your actions be bigger than your words, you know. Intentions don't mean a whole lot, and when it comes right down to it, words don't mean a whole lot. It's what you actually do.
And a couple things that while you were talking kind of reminded me of, as far as with my son, I've always told my kids, you know, you see a lot of the guys with the hats of World War II veteran, I remember telling Mason a long time ago, the guys with the Vietnam veteran's hat. I go, if you ever see one of those guys, you shake their hand. You know, I said those are some of the baddest dudes. You know, told them a little bit of the history, and I think it was last summer, we were at the gas station. I went in, paid for gas, and Mason was kind of him and hawing about what he wanted. So I said, well, I'm going to go pump gas. You pay, you know, gave him money. And so I was pumping gas, and he comes out, gets in the car. And this guy walks by and just walks up and goes, is that your boy? And I go, yeah. Like, uh-oh.
Did he bite you?
What
did
he steal? Yeah.
But,
if he bit you, no.
Right.
Not Mason.
But I said, yeah, Mason would never do anything. Yeah. I go, yes, sir. And he goes, well, you got to find him. He shook my hand. And I was confused for a second. And then I noticed he had a Vietnam veteran's hat on. And I said, you know. So when I got in, I said, did you talk to that guy? And he goes, yeah. I went up and shook his hand, and I go, oh, okay. And I just remember, because the conversation he and I had about it was real brief. You know, if you ever mm-hmm. see those hats, these are the guys. And I just remember, like, feeling one of those, you know, that's a real moment. Of, you know, I got a real big sense of pride going, all right, this is pretty cool. But, like, stories like that
is,
right.
Stuff.
Yeah. But just things like that that really make you feel good.
My brother is a Marine. And he's now out of the Marines or whatnot, but Kevin is, who's been on the podcast too. But it's funny, when Ben was smaller, he used to think of Uncle Kevin as a superhero. And so I'm going to choke up too, because, so he used to think of my brother as a superhero. And reality is, you know, I mean, Ben used to say, he's out there fighting the bad guys, Dad. And, you know, it makes me feel good that my son, you know, knows that about his brother and recognizes the importance of what my brother was doing. And it's just, you know, and Kevin's just an amazing guy. But again, it's those things that we teach our kids that we want that we feel are important. And then when they find that, like, when we see it present itself or perform, however you want to put it, when you see the performance of it, you're like, oh, my God, my kid's amazing. Like, I my values have now been instilled in somebody else. The things that are important to me are now instilled in somebody. And you're taking that cycle and you're perpetuating it. I don't know. I'm just really proud of my brother and my kid. So, Kevin.
I think, to elaborate a little bit on what you said because it's important to you, it was you like to see that in him. But I think the bigger thing is it's a good thing for the world, not just because it's important to you. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's actually a very good thing to have out there to perpetuate. Because you can say the same thing, like, so how is racism and how is prejudice passed on? A lot of times it's that same way, you know, unfortunately. But I think, you know, you could take pride in the fact that you're passing on all these great things, you know what I mean, that are going to benefit society and not take it down, you know what I mean?
And I think I do this too. A lot of it getting, and everybody in the gym steps up and helps all the time, 100%. And I don't. Part of me makes me feel like that's going to make somebody else do it. And I've gotten several messages from friends, you know, through social media, you know, all around the country. One of my friends messaged me down in Indiana. He was just became co-owner of a gym. He said, hey, I really feel inspired by, you know, seeing all the stuff that you guys do. We're going to do something like that for this, you know. And then Mike Lohman, they did a thing, a pull for pups, like a deadlift thing. And I'm not taking credit for it, but I'm just saying. And he messaged me and said, hey, you know, I really got involved with this. I think it was something they were doing. Again, I'm not saying they did it because I did it. But, it's causing more people to get involved with things that were already set up.
And, it's like a ripple effect.
Right. But even, right. And yeah, even sure. Seeing that really makes me say, hey, this is, you know, if one person sends me a message saying, hey, I got involved because of this, you know, and then two people get involved because of that, I don't know. It makes kind of makes me feel like we're winning the battle.
You know, talking, like you said, that whole butterfly effect or the ripple. I think that's important too. And the other thing too, Shane, I think is by you doing that and people seeing, okay, this is just a normal guy, you know, helping out a little bit and trying to make the world a little bit better. Well, now it's approachable. So, and I think that you do that in the gym. And I also think like you can see it like on social media and you can see like people getting more and more involved. So, I mean, you know, you're making the world a better place and it's, you know, how many people can say they're doing that? You know, you try to, but you're actively making a difference and it's about production.
And so, even with the gym, we've been able to help like Pam Aguela, how do you say her last name?
Let's go with that.
They were doing the thing for the Flint kids, and she just said, hey, can we use the gym as a drop-off point? And I'm like, absolutely. You know, we've done that with the Bearded Villains, which is a beard club group of guys that last year did a drop-off for coats for kids. And so just little things like that, you know, being able to use the gym as a spot to help people, you know, who want to get involved with stuff.
And the other thing that I think that this gym is like a safe haven for people, too. Like, I think if, you know, it's like one of those places that's safe and, like, people know that they can come to that type of stuff. And, you know, and not just for that, but, like, you know, I've had times when just through my divorce that I've come to this gym and just it's been me at 3 o'clock in the morning just drinking a beer, just trying to get out of my own environment. But it's a safe haven for a lot of us.
And it's funny how, like we've spoke about before, individually we're all just big dumb meatheads, but then collectively when the dad came up and picked up the equipment for his kid and kind of told the story, you know, I've been down on my luck and this is really going to make a difference, and he even said this is hard on my ego to accept.
Yep.
And I said, dude, don't, and like he gave me a hug, and it was one of those, it wasn't just a hug, hey, what's up, I mean it was a true genuine thank you. And JJ was standing there, and then after the guy left, JJ goes, hey, I'm proud of you. And he goes, for keeping it together. And I just remember going, JJ, like, did we just have a moment? Like,
that was best friends.
Right. And, wait. And if JJ heard the story, he'd be like, I didn't do that. But you know what I mean? Yeah. But it was one of those. But when the guy hugged me, you felt a genuine, sincere thank you. You helped me. This is, you know. And like I said, that was probably, if you ask me how my holiday season was, that was probably top.
Highlight?
Yep.
You know, it's funny. Aren't you the same guy that pulled a guy out of a pizza place for messing with your son?
Well, yeah, that's a. I actually love that story, but yeah, like we spoke
so
about
many
before.
Good story, right? Oh, God.
But like I said, individually, we're all big sappy guys who cry at Alabama songs. But yeah, that was.
What's that story?
Well, Clayton was 17, working at. Probably shouldn't say. I think statute of limitations is over. But he was working at a pizza place and gave me a call and said he was quitting his job. And I said, no, we don't quit jobs. Tell me the story. And he said, well, my boss pushed me and then pinned me up against the wall and told me he was going to punch me in the fucking head. And I'm like, no, no, no. And again, the kid's 17. He's my kid. There's got to be more to it, right? So I said, no, tell me the story. And then Nicole, his mom, called me and told me the story. And I just said, give me 100% of the detail. And in my mind, I'm picturing he's 17 with a mouth, manager of a pizza place. Mm-hmm. Probably some, you know, 20-year-old kid or so. And he told me the story. He forgot to put ranch with an order. I'm speeding this along. Find me for the detailed version. It's a little bit better. And so I said, if I go up there and talk to this guy and get his version of the story and it's different, like it's going to be your ass. Like you're the one. And he goes, nope, this is exactly how it happened. So I'm like, man. So I'm like sitting, kind of stewing a little bit. Like, man, I don't know what I should do. How should I handle this? The logical part of my brain is like, don't go up there. You get an assault charge. You lose your CPL, blah, blah, blah. And but then I actually had a roommate at the time, Leah, who's a Puerto Rican girl. Mm-hmm. Who I told her the story, and she went full Puerto Rican. Oh, hell no. And the head bobbing, and because I had Mason with me, and she goes, right. Yeah, this
thanks,
is
Derek.
Derek with the assist. This is all allegedly.
Alleged.
Right, allegedly.
Derek's got your back.
Derek had 2 years of law school. she said, I got Mason. You go up there. So I went up there and just said, I just got to hear his side of the story. So I walk in, and it was about 10 o'clock at night. They were closing. The guy goes, hey, sorry. You know, we're getting ready to close. And I go, you know what? That's all right. And I was looking. There was 3 guys behind the counter. And just looking at them, like, I knew. I knew exactly who it was. And I go, are you A? And he goes, yeah, what can I do for you? And then I said, dude, I'm going to have to talk to you outside. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, what's this about? And I just said, either come outside or I'm dragging you outside, but we're gonna talk outside. Then it's kind of, you know, all three of them are posturing up. So Clayton's stepdad had dropped him off at work. I'd been in there, but I'm not sure that I'd seen anybody. So as I'm walking out the door, I said, I just need you to tell me what happened between you and my son today. And he goes, your son? And I said, Clayton. And he like froze in the doorway. So then I knew something was up, right? So I just shoved him into the parking lot, and I'm like, and he like looks around like he's gonna run, and I go, dude, if I have to catch you, it's going to be way worse. Like, don't make me
don't
run.
Don't make me run.
So I asked him his side of the story, and his side matched Clayton's 100%, and allegedly I made him regret 100% of what he did. But it was just one of those, like I said, don't mess with my kids, don't mess with my friends, and aside from that, we'll be okay. But that was one of those moments in my life that was a, what do I do? A or B. And it turns out the guy used to be like a 300-pound guy who lost 100 pounds and thinks he's a badass. And
great.
Devil on my shoulder with one.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I had a friend at the time who was a federal agent, and I called him and said, here's the story. Here's what I'm going to do. And he just said, well, remind him that assault on a minor is a felony. Like, he's going to jail. Like, you might get a cop who's a dad or an uncle or something, and right. you might get a disturbing the peace or something like that. He goes, but he's going to jail. So after it happened, and he was calling the cops, and I said, well, just let me tell you. And then we kind of called the owner of the pizza establishment and worked it out via the telephone. So, but I did sleep that night staring out the window just waiting for the cops to pull into my driveway.
Yeah. There's I think I told this story one time before. Like, you know, when you have a kid, you don't realize like how the depths of your anger at times whenever something like that happens. My son, I used to let him walk around in Target or, you know, other stores and whatnot like that, and I'd let him go meander on his own, but I'd always be behind him, you know, like I'd be a step or two behind him where he couldn't see me, just to try and get him to where he could, you know, kind of feel a little more secure. So one day, like, I don't know what was going on, he goes to the toy aisle, because he was probably about 5 or 6, And you know how, like, you get that suspicion? Like, you see somebody that you know just something's not right with. Okay, so I'm looking for a second. I look over, and Ben's in the toy aisle, and I'm right, like, basically on the end part. And I see this guy come very close to my son, and I see him talking to my son. And out of nowhere, that daddy dar went off, and I walked up to him, and I think I had just, I don't know what I was wearing. I think I was wearing a tight T-shirt or some shit. And I walk up to him, and I'm like, can I help you? And he goes, yeah, is this your son? I'm like, yeah, where's yours? And he goes, I don't have one. And I'm like, then what the fuck are you doing talking to mine in a toy aisle? And at that moment, and at that very moment, any word that would have said that would have postured or anything else, I would have tried to do anything I could to rip his fucking head off. Like, there was something inside me that I felt it wasn't right. Like, you know, panel van type trench coat type thing. That's how I felt about this guy. And the guy just pissed off. Now, that guy could have been harmless. That guy could have been meaning well or whatever. I don't give a shit. That's my son. You know? I don't think in my lifetime I've ever felt that rage. Like, don't screw with my kid ever. Ever. Don't talk about my kid. Don't mess with him. Just leave him alone, you know? That's the one thing. So, Mike, you got two daughters. I mean, oh, my God.
I feel completely uncomfortable when, like, somebody else's kid comes up to me and starts talking to me. I'm like, get away from me.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's sad.
Which is too bad, yeah.
Yeah, it really, but there have been these days that it's, you know, single digit outside. I pick Mason up from the bus stop, and there have been days that I'll pick him up, and he'll say, oh, can we give so-and-so a ride? And I'm like, man. But back when I was a kid, that was easy. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, a couple of kids, I know their parents, and I know they'd be okay with it. But it's sad that, you know, mm-hmm. you gotta think about those things nowadays.
Especially when you got pricks like me that are like, you know, just stay away. Right. Stay away. Mike always said he was going to do the Al Bundy treatment, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, just bump him into every single thing in the house on his way out the door. Face first.
Mike, what'd you say? It only takes one?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You just got to do it to one person and the story is spread.
And embellished.
Yeah.
Actually, when that alleged story I talked about in the pizza place, that was back when I had all the stuff in my garage. I hadn't opened the gym yet. So I was doing all my accessory work at the Livonia Rec Center. And apparently that guy used to go there and had a bunch of friends. And it was just funny. Like, every time I'd walk in there, a couple of them had come up and told me the story, and their version of the story was heavily embellished, and I'm like, yeah, let that roll. Your version's way cooler than what really happened, so yeah, let's go with that.
So let's get back to the topic real quick. We were talking about, like, philanthropy, and oh, by the way, just so you know, the song that we played, the song by Alabama, Shane and I were talking about, like, you know,
the most ridiculous things that...
Yeah. Yeah, we were talking about, like, one day, like, I was fucking crying over a Snuggle Bear commercial or, like, a Downy Bear because the bear fell into the... And I just, for some reason, it hit me, and I started crying. And wow. Shane was listening to that song one time and started crying, and it just... We're idiots, but... so, you did some stuff for Relentless. You've done things for Relentless. You've done things, countless things for children, like... Decorating hospital rooms, and you've done like a lot of different things. I mean,
dinner.
what
dinner for the
dinner? Yeah, hospital. Absolutely,
that's beautiful.
But what else do you foresee in your future, Shane? What other kind of things that do you have in your mind that you want to do? And it doesn't have to be specific, and you don't have to tell me specifically for who, but
Motor City.
Like I want to hear some other things that you're interested in trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I was actually a little disappointed this year. The last 2 years we've done the lifts for gifts right before Christmas, but you know, I had a lot going on, didn't get to, but I'm sure we'll do. People are constantly wanting to do competitions. Are you hosting anything? And we've never done a real grand opening of this new Plymouth location, so probably springtime I want to do something, you know, I'll find something to give to, but do something like kind of a big event, maybe for a grand opening for the gym and get people out here and do something. But aside from that, just continue with the Relentless and
you want to talk about Motor City?
Yeah, we're hosting that's not going to be a fundraiser aside from the scholarship, but
scholarship.
We're hosting U.S. Strongman Motor City Strongest Man. It's going to be March 11th. So we're going to host a U.S. Strongman competition in conjunction with J.J. Thomas and Detroit Barbell are hosting the UPA State Championships powerlifting meet on the same day. So it's going to be same day, same location. two for one. Your admission gets you into both. JJ and I were talking about we're just going to split the gate, even though it's probably going to be spectator-wise 80% strongman, 20% powerlifting because it's a boring sport. But so
powerlifting
yeah.
is the boring sport.
Right, right. Yes.
Yeah.
To watch, I'm saying, from a mm-hmm. participant slash spectator perspective.
All around.
Yeah.
All around.
But so that's March 11th, and that's going to go towards Steve Barkley had hosted that the last 8 years, so this is the ninth year of Motor City Strongest Man. Steve's actually competing this year, and that goes towards that's going
to
go towards a scholarship for he used to teach at Warren Mott High School. So that's going towards one of his student athletes going away to college. So that's Steve's thing, not mine. But we will be hosting it.
So in like we talked about it shortly, but I'd like to talk about it a little bit more. Corey Allen, who we've had on the show before, Corey's a cancer survivor. His cousin Brett died of cancer, and Corey found out that he had Ewing sarcoma and he ended up getting like his part of his leg removed, and Corey fought it, and he's winning, and it's from Foundations for Strength. They're having a charity ball February 24th. The charity ball is going to be like absolutely bitchin'. It's going to be at Laurel Manor. It's going to be Saturday, February 24th, from 7 p.m. to 12:30 a.m. It's going to be a really big deal. It's a black tie event, so tuxedo, evening dresses, red carpet, the whole nine yards. Tickets are going to be $100 a piece.
Open bar.
Open bar, though, $100 a piece. It's going to get you open bar, dancing, all that stuff. So. There's a website. Can you tell me what site that is, Jen? There's a place to get tickets.
Oh, it just has foundationforstrength.org.
Okay. So foundationforstrength.org.
Is it the word for?
Yeah.
Yes, that's the word.
Foundationforstrength.org. You can get the tickets. You have to get them by, I believe, February 1st or February 2nd. Ford has donated, I believe, $15,000 for this. Other companies, from what I understand from Corey, have donated as well. But all the money is going to go towards cancer. It's going to go towards children. It's going to go towards helping people that have cancer, helping people in need of that.
And they even help people. A lot of people will go through the GoFundMe or the Facebook mm-hmm. where they take, I forget what it is, I don't want to blast them, but it's right around 5%, 6% that they mm-hmm. take on a GoFundMe. Mm-hmm. If you do your fundraising through Foundation for Strength, you get 100% of the proceeds. That's one of the things that they do. If you're doing a fundraiser, go see them, and they can help you, you know, get it out there and raise the money for you.
The deadline for tickets is February 1st.
February 1st, okay. So go to foundationforstrength.org. Go to that site, please, and make a donation or come on out to Laura. You're going to see all us meatheads. All us meatheads are going to be out there. We're going to be dressed to the tilt. I'm getting a tux, folks. I'm going to look like a fucking penguin because I'm only 5 foot tall.
A little penguin.
Yep. I'm going to waddle, too, because of my belly, and everything's going to be good. But we're going to get all dressed up, and it's for a great cause.
Shane's going to wear high heels to show right. off the glutes.
With my sleeveless tux.
Yeah, there you go.
And assless.
Hashtag sleeves are bullshit.
Assless tux. What's that? Oh, where's that light coming from? That's Shane's butts. But
I can say there's enough hair. There's no glare.
Yeah.
Is that a beard on that head? No. That's butt hair, folks. But we're but it's for a great cause, and it's going to be, like I said, if you guys want to, I mean, I don't know who listens and whatnot, but we'd love to see you. We'd love to.
Well, you better get this one on the air pretty quick.
Yeah. We'd love to see you. We want to get you guys out there. Please, please, please go to foundationforstrength.org and come on out and hang with us and drink some beer with us and, you know, have some fun.
Buying drinks at the open bar.
Yep. So
if you get Shane drunk enough, you might even see him dance.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I'm twerking this shit.
Oh my
mm-hmm.
god.
Yeah. You want to see a penguin twerk? Here's your chance. So guys, we're going to wrap this up. I just wanted to, like, I appreciate it because I think a lot of times, like I said, us, like, meatheads kind of get, like, a bad rap. Like, you know, meatheads, a lot, you know, you see the gym rats preening and What do we call fuck boys? Yeah, you see a lot of those guys just kind of like walk around and congregate and stuff like that. But there are some really good people involved in this gym, and not only in this gym, but in the strength community. In the strength community, a lot of great people. And it's not like I want to give attention to Shane, or it's not like I want to give attention to anything. But I want people to know. But I want people to know that this is approachable, and people can do this, and one person can make a difference. And that's what I think you do.
And like I said, I get a lot of that, a lot of the credit, and a lot of. But like I said, I couldn't do it without, you know, everyone that's in the gym and everybody who's with me. You know, I typically just throw an idea out there, and then all the money comes in and all the support comes in from the members of the gym. So we've got a solid group of people here.
Yeah, but you manage a lot of that, Shane, and it's not like. Like, and ever since, like, I came to Strength Depot, what, a year ago, 2 years ago? Like, ever since I came here, like, you've done that, whether it be for dogs, whether it be for children, no matter what. And it's always, like, this sense of giving. And like I said, one person can make a difference. And, you know, I think you're making the Rickman family proud, the name proud.
Thank you.
So,
And I think I got two examples of that within the last week of how approachable the gym is, and how I've got we've got a kid that comes out whose dad reached out to me. Where were they from? Heartland, I think.
I think that's what I said. Yeah.
Is that an hour drive? But his son's got autism, you wouldn't know, very very high functioning. But his kid was going into the gym at school and training, like that's his passion. Like he loves training, and was kind of getting picked on by some of the other kids and not picked on. I feel like I'm embellishing the story, but you know, just saying you're not doing this right, you're not doing that right, and like why not just leave him alone? So his dad went through Aaron West, a good friend of mine, and said he wants to do strongman. He watched the strongman, and Aaron sent him down here, and the kid's 16, came and like I said, with autism, came in on Saturday morning, and I didn't warn anybody here, and nobody here.
Yesterday?
Knew who he was. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And, that was his first time, right? Training.
He'd been in here before, twice. This was his third time, but the first time with the group. The other two times was just Bob and I took him through some stuff.
Okay.
And he jumped right in, did sandbag training, did a bunch of stuff. But on my Instagram page, yeah, we helped out with squats. Yeah. But his mom wrote me a note the second time he was here, a big long note saying, "You've brought me to tears with your generosity, and now." Whereas before, his dad said he didn't like going out into commercial gyms, didn't go.
Oh, wow.
And he said, the kid begs me all the time to go and keeps saying, that's his dad actually texted me today and said, we got in the car yesterday. And he said, that's the greatest place. I love those people. And I'm just like, man, that's awesome. And then
he was great. He was a sponge. Like, we gave him just a little, and I think he's going to be really, really good. And he's strong already, but he's just going to.
16 years old.
Yeah. He took cues really well. He took feedback really well. He's, like I said, he's a sponge.
But just like I said, and everybody was here. Saturday mornings were packed. Yeah. We were packed with strongmen. And the kid jumped right in, and and you know, people were jumping in and helping him out. And it was just one of those times where you step back and you're like, wow, this is a cool group of people. We got the right group of people here. Oh, for sure. And then
his dad said he'd be comfortable. So what we talked about is if he wants to drop him off with us, and then he can go about his day. Yeah. And then, you know, he's in good hands here. Yeah. We'll also take care of him. And, yeah, for sure.
And then
he was real happy about that.
We got a new member coming in tomorrow to squat with us who's – legally blind, but 100% blind, has a cane, and he again said that he went to 4-star strength and conditioning, which is an Olympic weightlifting gym in Livonia, and said he was looking to do some powerlifting and stuff like that, and they sent him here.
Oh, cool.
You know, so I mean, it's good to see other gyms recommending, and the guy, like I said, blind, he's probably 40, he's a record holder in some, I forget the group, but it was a limited site powerlifting organization, and came in, and I was kind of telling him, well, if you want to come in Monday and see, and JJ was here, Nick Davis was here, everybody went up, shook his hand. God damn it. I did say, if you want to come in and see the gym. I mean, if you want to come in and feel out the gym experience, give me a thesaurus, somebody. All three of these guys looked at me like, dude.
Five cents a shade.
I didn't say anything.
All right. So he's coming in tomorrow to squat with us.
Yeah. He can squat with us.
But, yeah. But he was 100%, like I said, Nick and JJ, everybody came up and shook his hand and talked to him and told him he was in the right place. And so it's just like I said, I say it a lot, but
it'll help us all not to be assholes either. We'll have to pick up our stuff.
Right. Yeah, to pick up after yourself. But yeah, he was walking through, and that's what he said was, give me 2 weeks here of seeing where everything is, and I'll have it down pat. And
I said it again.
Did I?
Son
of a bitch.
I mean, what else are you going to say?
I know. All
right. Yeah, okay. So we're gonna wrap this up. So this has been, like I said, you can make a difference. Whatever little thing that you do, anything that you do is not a little thing if it's for somebody else. So for Mike, for Jen, for Shane, I'm Chuck. We're going to leave you right here. And thanks for listening to Strength Depositions. And we'll be back again. Peace out.
It rings, but it's not.